Hey guys, this episode is with Simone Pitilli. He's an Italian World Tour rider on Intermarché Wanty. If you're new to the show, there's no ads. I've never made any money from these. It's just to provide free information about cycling and training from the best coaches and riders in the world. Selfishly, it's so I can ask the most experienced people in the world the questions I'm curious about. I really love this podcast, one, because Simone's a great guy to chat with, but he's super into the training science and talking about that stuff is fun for him. So he's very open about all the stuff he's done and tried and what works best. So if you like sports science, this episode is full of cool new ideas. If you like this kind of content, I wrote a book called How to Become a Pro Cyclist. Simone actually read it and loved it, so that's the book he was mentioning. It's the most dense source of information on cycling you can find anywhere, and it comes with a 100% money-back guarantee, so it's risk-free for you. It's a bundle which contains an audiobook, ebook, and video series. It contains more information than 3 years of personal coaching for a quarter of the price of most sunglasses. And most people finish it in 3 to 5 days. So if you like this kind of content, it might be worth it to check it out. howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. I hope you love it.
The AirPods doesn't work well.
Yeah, probably from having too much sweat in it from training with them.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, it's okay. How is your winter training, man? How's it been?
All good. Now I'm restarting working after Australia. Because I did the first move there, and then now it's time to do some build-up again for the real beginning of the season in Europe.
Yeah, it's crazy. So when was your first race day of the year?
This year I did Santos Down Under, 16 January. At first we did Criterium. Then I stayed there another week for Surfers Classic and Cadel Evans. Now I already done one race in Europe, Figuera, Saturday. But was a bit too early, so I know and I helped the team.
Okay. So you started the season in the middle of January, and then you take a pause, and you're getting ready to start again.
Yeah, I already have 10 race days, and it's still time to restart for me.
When did you end last season? When was the last race day last year?
Not so early. I finished in Japan Cup in half of October.
You finished that in the middle of October, and then how long did you take off the bike? How long was the break off the bike?
Just three weeks in total.
Okay. Did you do anything fun for that?
I didn't have so much time this winter. I had to fix some things, dentist, a lot of things that you don't have time during the season, and then you have to do it later.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's the funny thing is people think you get a rest day and it's like, oh, you just lay on the couch. It's like, no, a rest day, it's like when you do all the chores that you've been ignoring for the rest of the week. It's like you take care of all the normal life stuff.
Yeah, the problem, the cycling life is like this. You are so busy during the season and during races and everything else that then when you have rest time, you have to do what you didn't do in the past before.
Yeah, exactly. So how was the winter training, though, between when you started in, let's say, November, I guess, like November till the start of the season? How was that training going?
Yeah, it started quite easy because, honestly, I had also an hard end of the season because I finished with Vuelta, all the Italian classics, and then Japan Cup. So I was a bit tired and I prefer to restart it quite easy, only with endurance training. I've had just in December during the training camp some VO2 and intensity training just to have some explosivity for Australia. But then I did my job there and then now it's time to rebuild up because it's a different kind of racing. I mean, it was nice in Australia, but short stages, not long climbs and always a kind of racing quite relaxed, not so hard. But then now in Europe, the races are really demanding.
Yeah, okay. So how did you like Australia, though?
Yeah, I liked a lot because honestly, I'm a guy that I kill myself during training. So most of the time, I start too early to be in shape during the season and then doesn't last too long. Like this year, I could have taken a bit easier in January because I was racing. And then now maybe I reach my peak a bit later.
Okay, so give me an example. What is the craziest you've ever gone with pushing it too much in training? Because I can relate to this a lot.
It's nothing incredibly crazy, but I'm a guy that always like to feel the chain under his pedal. So I never go easy. For me, below 200 watt, it's not training. Also, when I have a rest day or recovery day, now they tried to keep me quiet. But in the past, also the recovery ride was like 33, 34, 35 average.
That's super perfect. Where in Italy are you? Where do you live in Italy?
On the Lake of Como, close to Milan, but in the area of Giro di Lombardia.
Yeah, cool. Is that your favorite place to train, or do you go anywhere else for training camps?
In winter, normally with the team, we go in Spain. We stay always around Calpe in Albir, and we train there. And it's nice because the weather, it's a bit warmer than where I live actually. It's not so bad, but sometimes can be quite cold during the winter. And during the season, I just do some altitude training. For example, in April, I think I go to Sierra Nevada. And during summer, I'm used to go to Livigno. That it's also close to my home because it's just 1.5 hours by car.
Yeah, me too. Well, I'm coming from the north, like from Austria where I am. I love Livigno. That's my favorite place to go.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Yeah. Which hotel do you normally stay at when you're there?
Normally, I try to stay in Trepalle on the top of Passo Era. So I go to Hotel Latea or Alpina. Yeah. It depends where there's space because normally it's always busy. But then sometimes it's too late when I book because I never know exactly my program. And I've been also in Alpen Village, really nice, and Hotel Paradiso. That are two really nice places.
Yeah, cool. No, I've been in the Alpine Village as well. That was my first time when I was there. And when I was there, I think there was like four other World Tour teams all staying in the same place. So everybody goes and does their training all day. And then everybody's in the sauna together at the end of the day. And all the normal people there looking like, what's up with all these skinny guys with the weird tan lines in the sauna with us?
Yeah, it's incredible. Alpen Village is super nice. I think hotel is one of the best because you have everything. Super good restaurant, gym, sauna, spa, everything you need.
Yeah, and it's nice to be in Livigno. It's amazing food. The Italian culture is so nice. Well, yeah, for you, that's home, but I love it. The Italians are so like laid back, relaxed, the best food. It's great riding around there. Like the thing is with a lot of altitude camps, when you go there, it's like one road to go up and down to whatever hotel you're staying at. And in Livigno, you have so many different options for different routes and stuff you can do.
Yeah, because Livigno, for me, the best things that there's in Livigno, it's the flat between the tunnels, because there are not so many places in altitude with a plateau, I mean, in so high altitude. Because, for example, if you want something similar, you have to go in Colombia or somewhere else really far. But also everywhere else, like Sierra Nevada, Teide, Andorra, there's never a plateau at so high. So it's good if you want to spin the legs in the end of the training or if you just need to do an easy ride. Some other places, it's impossible. You have to do downhill and uphill or nothing else.
Yeah, sure. Do you do anything different with your training when you go to altitude? Do you change anything?
It depends on the period because, for example, the altitude block in April that I normally do before Giro, it's a demanding one. I mean, I have to work a lot because it's also to preparing a Grand Tour and it's in the beginning of the season, so a bit different. In July, in Livigno, normally we take it a bit easier because we also need to recover from the first part of the season and then build up again. So Livigno, it's also a perfect place because you can do something else apart cycling. But when you do an altitude training camp in the beginning of the season or for an important goal, maybe you are on the top of a mountain alone, just doing every day a lot of hours, a lot of work and nothing else.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Do you do anything else other than cycling, like any cross training, other sports or
sometimes I go running, especially in the winter, because when I restart the season, like my preparation this year, I told you I've taken it easy on the bike, just endurance ride. But I like to alternate with some other sports like running and gym that I keep always during the season.
Okay. How much running do you do? Like how long is a normal run?
I restarted not a lot of years ago. So do you know the body of a cyclist? We have the heart and brief capacity, but the articulation and the rest, the muscle, suffer a lot. And this year I did not so many run, but quite long, always between 10 and 15 kilometers at a quite easy pace, 4:30 per kilometer, 5 minutes per kilometer.
Okay, so how long is that? What is that? I'm trying
around
to
around 1 hour. This okay, winter wow. I okay, run cool. always between 1 hour and 1 hour 10, 15. That was always 12, 15, 16 kilometer.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's funny what you say with that, because I also love trail running, but it's exactly the same thing that you just said. Is like you have the heart and the lungs for it. So it's like you take a Volkswagen Beetle and you put a Ferrari engine in it, and then you go race the Baja 1000. So it just like it flies off all the jumps, but then the wheels and the suspension and everything else just flies off it when you land.
Yeah, I do the same example a lot of times. It's like a Panda. Do you know the Italian car? A really small one with the engine of a Ferrari. So we can yeah. go faster, but then our body is not adapted to it. And maybe you do a run without suffering. And then for 1 week or 10 days, you are not able to walk again.
Yeah, exactly. And then how much time do you spend in the gym?
Normally I do 2-3 sessions per week during the winter, and during the season I try to keep 1-2 training every 10 days or 2 weeks. And normally my session is not so long, around 40-50 minutes, just with the extensor exercise, because I don't like to do 15-20 reps of exercise. I just try to do 6-8 repetitions each exercise with some good weight for me. Not so heavy because I don't have a lot of strength, but I mean, good to do the stimulus for the body.
Okay, so which exercises do you do?
I always start with a bit of activation with core exercise, ups and the back. And then I do in order back lunges, deadlift, Bulgarian squat and step up. Normally, this exercise in circuit plus the normal squat alone in the end of the training.
Okay, cool. And then the other thing that some guys talk about is like doing it like really explosive or doing the exercises fast, like changing the speed. Do you do this at all? Like when they jump up onto boxes stuff like that?
I'm not a sprinter. I mean, I don't have also good peak power, so it's not my best ability, but I try to periodize it. For example, in the beginning of preparation between November, December, I don't do so much explosive exercise. I prefer to use a bit heavier weight and then doing it to build my strength. But then in the maintenance period during the season, I prefer to do it with a bit lighter weight, but explosive, like you said. The same exercise, but just try to do it a bit faster.
Okay, cool.
But I don't do jump and something else because it's a bit like running. Then I maybe injure myself or I cannot walk for a long time.
Okay, cool. And do you do it before or after you go on the bike?
It depends on the period, but I don't care so much about it. For example, if the day after I have a normal ride or also an endurance ride, I can do also in the afternoon, in the evening, after the bike ride. Or if I have an important training, I mean some hard exercises, VO2 max interval, I prefer to do it in the morning and then I do bike later. Not to really spin the legs, but because I feel a bit better the day after.
Okay, cool. And then so what's the big goal for this year? Are you doing the Giro this year?
Normally, yes. I mean, the pre-selection, you know, till the last moment, you never know in the World Tour team, but normally I have to be there. So like Italian, it's one of the best races, and a Grand Tour, it's always, for me, one of the biggest goals of the season. I won't go there for super results, but I'm realistic now. It's a lot of years I'm pro, and if you have the good chance, you have to take it.
Yeah, sure. Is the Giro your favorite race?
Stage race, yes. Then there are one day race and other race is super nice, but just because I never done Tour, but I think Giro stay the best one for an Italian.
Yeah. The Giro is my favorite race. That's really cool. How many times have you done it?
4 or 5 times already, I think, Giro.
Okay. Yeah, you got third on the stage last year, right?
Yeah, we were talking now. It's my best results till the moment, but also the biggest regret I have in my career, because like we said, I know I cannot compete with the GC rider or the poor climber, but if you have a good opportunity in a breakaway, you have to take it all. And that day, honestly, I felt super good. I managed perfectly. But then in the end, in the last part of the climb, I think I did a lot of mistakes. So I learned the lesson. Honestly, the other riders were also stronger, riders that beat me. But I have some regrets. So I come back to Giro to fix that regret, I hope.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I remember watching that stage, and the three of you guys were absolutely dead going up the mountain.
Yeah, honestly,
been that in the breakaway stage, all day.
No one believed in the breakaway. Or, I mean, in the beginning, a lot of riders wanted to be in the breakaway because it was the first uphill finish, and some riders believed there was a chance. But it must have been a big group, like 8, 10 riders at least. In the end, we went in the breakaway, only 4 riders, and one dropped immediately because he felt not so good. So 3 riders, Edwin all the day, and 4,000 meter Russians with 220 kilometer stage, I think. So it was, for someone could have seen like a nightmare, but honestly, in the back, they look each other and we got a super opportunity.
Yeah, cool. No, I just remember watching the stage because I know Carl Vacek, who was also in that break. And you guys were going so slow up the last mountain. Like, you guys are just dead. You're like, they're empty. They have nothing left trying to get up this mountain.
Yeah, honestly, it was like a race that happened in the past. I mean, it was not a contemporary cycling, because 3 riders just not being as fast as possible in the last climb, but going as less slow as possible. I mean, who would have survived would have won the stage.
Okay, what's the most, because the Giro has so many epic stages, like so many iconic climbs and just massive stages, like you see them going over the passes in the snow and stuff. What's the most iconic stage of the Giro you've ever done?
Honestly, the hardest stages in Giro I had always in the first year when I did it, when I was Neo Pro in 2016. But not so much because of the stages. Yeah, for sure was hard, but also because I got sick the last week and I was really young, not developed yet. And I just suffered all the last week with a fever and everything, but I wanted to finish it. So was the Giro where Nibali won it, revolting the general classification in the last week. And I remember the stage of Sant'Anna di Vinadio, the last one, when also my actual teammate, Rein Tarame, won it by the breakaway. But the start was uphill with a 15-20 kilometer climb. And after 200 meters, I think I was already dropped alone, trying to survive. But fortunately, then the breakaway gone, the group slowed down, and I was able to come back. So I just survived till when the gruppetto was made, and then I finished it. But Giro is always unbelievable. I mean, super nice. And I also remember some other super nice stage. For example, it was good when we did the double Stelvio with Mortirolo in the start, when Nibali won it, and was one of my favorite stage ever.
Wait, so what? I'm trying to, because I know the area really, you started up the Mortirolo. And then you did the Stelvio twice?
We did Mortirolo in the start, but fortunately from the easier side. I mean, easier, but still hard, like 9-10% average. And then we climbed Stelvio 2 times. First from Bormio, we reached the top. We go down from Trafoi and we climb back from Santa Maria, from Swiss. Was the stage where Dumoulin had the problem.
Ah, the bathroom break.
Yeah.
Okay. That's crazy. So you went up the Mortirolo, down the Mortirolo, up to Bormio, up over the Stelvio, down the Stelvio, and then back up the Stelvio from, like, up Umbrail from the Swiss side.
Yeah, from Umbrail, and then arrive in Bormio.
And the finish was in Bormio?
Yeah, finishing downhill.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds like an amazing stage. That's that's not that long, but that's an insane amount of climbing.
Yeah,
it was long, but
also the kilometers in the end was not so low. I think around 210 kilometer, but more than 5,000 meter of ascents.
That's amazing. That sounds so cool. That's the dream day. That sounds amazing, man. That's cool. I would have loved that. I think I would have loved it. It would have been
But it's really just cool. One of the normal stages that happen in Giro most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, so cool. I love all those climbs. And then you have the Gavia and so many other nice ones. Did you do the day when they finished on Lago di Cancano?
No, that year I was not there. It was the year of the pandemic, I think, in 2020.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Huh.
Yeah, but also so cool. That day was amazing. I remember I've seen from television, Rohan Dennis pulled so hard the whole Stelvio.
I think he still has the KOM up the climb, up the Stelvio. That's crazy. And then on the other side, I think Johannes Stanamitte broke the record in the Baby Giro last year. I think he has the record now from the Bormio side. And it was at the end of the stage that he won.
I think he has it because I talked with my actual teammate, Alexis Fauré-Prost, a young French rider that finished second. And I was discussing with someone and they still have the COM. And I think Alexis has the COM because he taken the climb behind him. But I don't know who published it on Strava. But honestly, it's almost the same time. But it's an amazing time.
Yeah, and it's cool to have the KOM on the Stelvio. That's one of the best climbs in cycling. That's amazing. What's the craziest thing you've ever tried for training? Like just ridiculous ideas.
I tried. I don't know now because I tried so many incredible things. But just to let you understand, I think the best numbers of my career was in July 2020. That means just before restarting the season, when we were blocked for the lockdown and everything. I mean, I trained so hard in that period that I reached my best shape of my life, I think, but was just before restarting the race. I restarted the race in August. The first 2-3 days, the first week was quite good, and then it just exploded.
Okay. So what did you do during the lockdown to train so hard? You were able to ride outside, or what were you doing?
In the beginning, it was mandatory in Italy to stay inside. So I did a lot of rollers. I passed between half of March till the beginning of May doing only rollers. So in the beginning, fortunately, I've taken quite easy. But then I start pushing more and more. Never crazy long ride, but like 2-2.5 hours, always pushing with hard efforts. And then when I restarted going out, I worked a lot. I mean, I was doing sometimes a block of training of 7-8 days consecutively. I mean, I was working with a coach, a really good one, but we were working also about feelings. I mean, till when I was not that, we were doing always work. And then when was needed, we were recovering 1-2 days. But like this, I give so much stimulus and was super nice. I mean, I really enjoyed that period. But then I start to understand that you always need a balance between working and also recovering.
Yeah, okay, sure. Do you think it was all the time on the indoor trainer that helped you get to that like super high level?
I think that it helped me in the beginning to have the not explosivity, but the brilliance. To do good exercise. Then when I was out, I did always a lot of good exercise. I mean, a lot of VO2max threshold exercise, VO2max threshold exercise during also long ride. Because like I said, I never go easy between the intervals. So I was always pushing and then doing intervals. So that I think gave me a super shape. But then, unfortunately, it doesn't last so much.
Yeah, okay, sure. When you do these big rides and you have the intervals, do you do the intervals at the start or the end of the ride? Or it doesn't matter?
Normally, it doesn't matter. But depending, I mean, in the beginning of the season, I try to do it in the start. Because obviously you have less endurance, so you try to give to do a good stimulus, but you cannot do it always in the end. Then going closer to the race, I try to do the maybe 1.5-2 hours in a good pace in zone 2, and then doing the intervals in the end.
Okay. And why do you think it's good to, do you think it's, well, what's the idea behind doing the intervals at the end?
It simulates a bit more what's happening in the race.
Because yeah. Do you think it works?
In most of the race, it's important to be brilliant in the end. And I mean, for me, that I'm quite an endurance rider, normally I don't have so much problem to do the same power in the beginning or in the end. But then I see that to be really competitive, I have also to simulate a little bit. But for that, not always matters so much for me. But I've seen a lot of other riders that really need it because they are so explosive and so strong in the beginning that maybe they cannot do it in the end.
Okay, interesting. Do you do you change anything with your nutrition during training? Do you always just eat a ton of sugar, or does it change at all depending on what the training is?
Yeah. Normally, for example, in endurance and zone 2 ride, I don't overpass 40-50 grams per hour if it's just the last one of the block. But if I have to do intervals or hard exercise, or if the day after I'm supposed to do an hard training, I overpass 70, 80, and I reach also 100 grams per hour in training.
Okay. What do you eat? Like, do you only eat like the team sponsor food, or like you got to get sick of that after a while? Like, you can't only eat gels 365 days a year. What else do you eat? I need some new ideas.
Yeah. Normally, I in my endurance ride and normal exercise, I always bring normal food also. For example, some simple cookies that are good with a good amount of carbs and not so much fat. Okay. For example, not to sponsorize, but in Italy exists cerealio that are a kind of biscuit with yogurt inside. And I always bring it when I'm training. Or then when I have to be really good, I bring bars, gel, and I put carbs in the bottle. For me, best solution, it's always the carbs in the bottle.
Yeah, me too. And it's just like, you just need to come up with new ideas because you get so sick of eating the same thing after a while.
Yeah. But in the end, you can try everything. I mean, in the bottle, it counts only how many carbs you have. But if it's your brand sponsor, if it's malt and fructose, if it's normal sugar, I think I tried everything. In the end, the effect is the same.
Yeah. Okay. And then what was it like when you turned pro with Lempre? What was that like? Is that one of the coolest moments of your career?
Yeah, it's a good memory. I mean, now everything I'm doing, it looks normal. It's a routine. Every race I go, also if it's a monument, a grand tour and everything else, it's just, okay, I'm doing it. I already done it. It's normal. But in the beginning, it was special. Also, I passed pro in Lampre, a World Tour team, the last Italian World Tour team, and I was racing in the side of a lot of champions. For example, Rui Costa, Ulissi, then I was teammate of a lot of other champions, like also Pogacar, Christoph, Martin, Aru. I was teammate of a lot of riders that a few years before I was just watching in television. And was a super nice atmosphere and everything.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, you're Italian. You get to sign your first pro contract with an Italian pro team. That's the dream.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Like I said, also, I did a lot of important races for season because I did Giro d'Italia immediately as Neopro. I don't know if I was ready yet, but like we said, also if I got sick, I wanted to finish it. So, I mean, now cycling, it's everything under control. They know already the numbers, the value of most of the rider. They know where they can arrive. But we still miss a bit of the heroic cycling. I mean, when rider, without knowing their limit, they were just pushing as much as possible to beat themselves.
Yeah, sure. What was it like when you got that first contract? Was it like a phone call? Did you have an agent? Were you out on a training ride and you get a phone call saying like, hey, you're going to the World Tour? What was that like?
Honestly, it was a quite long process because my last year under 23, I was racing for a continental team, Uni Euro Trevigiani. I don't know if you remember it. Mm-hmm. And I started to do really good results. I mean, already in the pro races, like Veglia, Appennino, Donoratico, Coppi Bartali, was finishing already top 10 in with the pro. And then I won Ronde Lizard, an important race, and I finish on the podium on Val d'Aosta and top 5 of Tour de l'Avenir. And already since April, I started to have the first contact with some pro teams, but to do tests, to talk with them. But the real call I received after Val d'Aosta, I remember the evening after the race, I was coming back home. And I received a call and they told me, I'm working for Lampre. If you are interested, can you come to the service course tomorrow? Because we want to talk with you. Because me, I live quite close also to the service course of Lampre. And obviously okay. I said, yes, I will. And then, okay, see you tomorrow. And the day after, I signed my first contract with Saronni and Copeland.
Oh, that's so cool. Were you talking to them at all before that? Like, did you have any contact with them before they asked you to come to the service course?
Yeah, but I did in May, I remember, a test with Lampre, with their coach, and they met one director, Marco Marzano, that then I have also in the team. And there I did a normal ramp test, you know. Lactate, VO2max, and I just done what I did with a lot of other teams also. But then they started following me also on Training Peaks because I give the access to the coach of the team to follow me. And then after that results, I was contacted directly from Lampre and fortunately signed.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Very cool. Who, out of any of the teams that you've been on, who is like the hard, you can't say yourself, who is the hardest working person, like the most focused, the craziest, when it just comes to crazy focus, hardworking, out of any of these teams you've been on, or that you know?
One of the hardest worker I've ever seen, Alex Christoph, because I've been his teammate in UAE, and then also 1 year in Wanty, in Intermarché, when he joined us 2 years ago in 22. And him, a lot of people talked about the Norwegian method because I met also last year the triathletes from Norwegian in Sierra Nevada. But Alex is unbelievable. He was doing so many hours. And if he had in his plan 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, he was always doing it. And he's an amazing guy. But then also other rider working really hard and a lot. Another example is Rui Costa. Rui Costa, he do in training as much as possible. I mean, the best for himself. And also the rest of his life is really focused on everything. On athlete life, I mean about recovering, nutrition, exercise. He's a really super person.
Yeah, really cool. Have you heard of anybody else doing anything really crazy? Like any just other crazy ideas to try to get faster?
Crazy idea. I seen riders doing double training, triple training also, and a lot of fasted training, special nutrition protocol. But in the end, didn't work so much, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good the idea in the beginning, but you always need a balance. Like we said, the exercise and the training maybe was working, but then was really important also to balance the recovery. Without the right recovery, you cannot have the effect of training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha. What about like over this last winter? I know you haven't had much time to train and you said it was mostly just endurance training. But did you review last year at all and change anything for this year? Like, did you look at last season and be like, I want to make whatever changes to try something new for this year?
Honestly, yeah, I changed the coach this year because in the team we change sometimes coach. Someone leave for other teams and someone new arrive. And I had a super relationship with my last coach. And now I'm working with a new one. In the beginning was a bit strange because they always need to let know the riders because every rider has his needing and everything. And about last year, I had a consistent season in the first part because it was always a good level. Then in the second part, I missed some brilliantly and it was not super good. But also in professional cycling, it's not just about performance, unfortunately, because you have to be ready for travel, last call, for races and everything. For example, I finished the season with Vuelta. I wanted to do it, but then I was not supposed to do it because there were already a good roster. But in the last moment, one rider got sick, so they called me just the day before. It was incredible. And I know I was not super, but I was consistent and I did my good job and I finished it without problem. But the performance has a secondary role sometimes. In also what you have to do for the team.
Yeah, sure. So you finished, or you got told you're doing the Vuelta the day before. You get a phone call the day before being like, hey, get to Spain. You have to do the Vuelta.
No, that I think was one of the most incredible things ever happened in my career. I was racing in Deutschland Tour on Friday, and half of the stage, under the rain, the director said in the radio, Simone, can you come to the car? I need to talk with you. Okay, but I didn't think about it at all. And he told me, your teammate got sick. You need to replace him for Vuelta. You have to leave the race and go there. So I abandoned the race. I stopped in the feed zone. And unfortunately, I didn't have time to take the flight that night. And I landed in Barcelona the day after at 1 p.m. And at 7, we have the team time trial.
You have to abandon. Is that even legal? Isn't there a rule that says you're not allowed to do?
They ask a derogation to UCI. I mean, you need the approval of the race that you abandon and the race that you go to do. Because if the race is not finished, you need the approval. But fortunately, Deutschland Tour and Vuelta are both organized by Haso.
That's so funny.
So in the end, I did like 24 stages consecutively.
That's so funny. Hey, you need to get off in the feed zone so you can catch a flight to go to the Vuelta.
Yeah. I stopped under the rain and I was thinking, at least I go in Spain. That is bad weather. And in the first week, we had always shit weather starting from the Team 10 trial.
Yeah. This is so funny when you, funny to watch, not funny for you guys. In the Vuelta, it's raining, and then you have guys finishing in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. This is crazy.
Honestly, us, we were lucky because we managed well. We didn't take so much risk, and we finished with the light. We didn't have problem. But the last team starting had that problem.
Yeah, you see Quickstep. Like, you see them coming to the finish line, and they're in the dark. It's like, how do you see?
Yeah.
It's nuts.
But was because of bad weather. Others that time would have been light in Spain.
Yeah. Okay. That's crazy. Well, do you have any other crazy stories like that? That was a really good story. Do you have anything else like that?
This one is one of the craziest.
Okay.
But it was called a lot of times in last moment also. Because one of my skills is being a jolly. I mean, I'm never super good, but I'm always consistent. I can keep my level always stable and I'm competitive.
What do you call it? A jolly?
In Italy, do you know when you play card, there's the card that is the jolly, the joker.
The joker. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're the joker.
And the joker is one of the most best card when you play card. And in Italy, we call jolly. And Jolly can do everything. I mean, he's
Okay, cool. How was it going from UAE to Wanty? How did you find the difference?
Yeah, in the beginning, itself was a challenge for myself because I was coming from one of the team that already proved was one of the best, but especially they wanted to be the first in the world. And I'm really happy for them because I'm still in good contact with them, that last year they could have won the world ranking classification for the team. But do you know, when in a team like this, you want to grow yourself, it's always difficult because there are a lot of champions everywhere. And honestly, I know that there I didn't have the chance to see where was my limit. In Wanty was a challenge, and the first year I had the chance to do as much results as possible for myself. But was a special year because of the pandemic. The season was stopped after a few races, and we restarted just in August with a strange calendar, and it was not one of my best season. Then the year after arrived a surprise. I mean, we passed World Tour. They bought the license of CCC, and the team starts changing. And there, I still have a lot of chance for myself, like now, because in Wanty, for me, Intermarché is one of the best team for a rider, because if you have legs and if you have a good condition, you always have your chance. I think a lot of riders have proved it already in the past. But then slowly I start understanding that I was not a champion. I mean, I was not able to win. So in the professional cycling, or you win or you help to win. And I found my role, and I'm a really good helper that sometimes can do his results, but mostly I like to support our leader and being the best as possible.
Okay, cool. And then what do you think it is, like, when guys talk about, you look at a team like UAE, or what a lot of people, actually, here's a good question for you. A lot of people say with Wanty, they don't have the biggest budget, but they do a lot with not much. Like they really do a great job at sports science and getting the best out of their riders, even if they don't have the biggest budget. Do you agree with that? Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, like I just said, Intermarché and Wanty is one of the best team because if you are motivated, if you have legs and everything, you always have your chance. So we have so many examples, starting from Rein Taramaé, Mentes, Rui Costa, Christoph, Hirt. A lot of riders that were super riders in the past. I mean, they already got super results and everything, but they were having some years without not so many results. They came with Wanty, and I think the familiar atmosphere, the possibilities, and then they really try to give to the riders as a chance as possible. I mean, if they can improve something on the bike to be faster, the best materials, nutrition, some protocols, and everything, you can have everything. And in the end, they proved like this was working. And also the team spirit, I think, made the difference, because if I look in the past, a lot of races, we were not the strongest, but we won it because we raced in a different kind, in a different ways. I mean, we attacked early, we did some action like a team, we explored the race really early, and not always worked, but a lot of times we were repaid for that.
Yeah, well, that's what's so cool about Intermarché, is like, it's not the team with the biggest budget or the flashiest. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the equipment, but it's like there's nothing. If you look from the outside, it's like there's nothing really special there, but you guys overperform so well. Like the results relative, like it's better than what you would expect from that. And that's like, I'm just curious, like, what does it? Do you do any like team bonding and stuff? Like, do you do like fun stuff? Like at team camp, do they take you to do like go-karts or something like that to like just get the team, everybody to work well as a team together? Like, what else do you guys do?
We do, honestly, a good team building always in October, because we do it first in Belgium, okay, close to the team service course. And then we do also the normal December and January training camp, where we do just normal bike training. But it's the atmosphere of the team that makes the difference. I mean, Also, when we are at dinner during the race or in the training camp, it's not that immediately when you finish it, you go in your room, you go somewhere else. We like to stay together, to talk, make fun, and having some chat together. And then also when we are training, yeah, everyone does exercise and everything, but most of the time then we also have fun. I mean, between the exercise, we talk, we do something. And also sometimes, instead of doing exercise, we do some small races between each other, small things like this that then create really the group.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, that's one thing you can say. It's like normally whenever you're at a race or something like that, you have all the teams normally eating dinner in the same room. Like everybody's at a different table, but normally you have like maybe five or six teams at the same hotel and everybody's having dinner in the same room. And one thing you notice is which teams stay at the dinner table the longest after they finish eating. Like there's some teams, they just stay there for another hour just talking and having fun. And that's always been really cool to me, is you see which teams have the best atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a really good and important things for me. And for that, now that I'm a quite experienced rider, when I see the young rider in the team that leave immediately or quite early, I try to say to them, wait, we are still here or is still finishing eating or we can do something, we can talk. And about that, I learned when I passed pro, because in Lampre was almost mandatory after dinner to go in the team bus to take a coffee together. Then we were not drinking the coffee because obviously it was after dinner. So we take decaf or something else, but was mostly for the atmosphere. I mean, every rider's together with our privacy, and we really create the atmosphere and the group of the team.
Yeah, that's so important. And that's so cool that after dinner, everybody goes to the bus to have an espresso. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. In the Italian team was almost mandatory, always. And now, unfortunately, in the race, there's always a lot of things to do. We finish late and everything, and there's not so much time. But when it's possible, we still do it.
Yeah, sure. Well, no, I completely understand both sides of it, right? Like when I was, like if I think about when I was like 21, 22, I would have been like the same person. Like I want to focus on my recovery. Okay, dinner's done. I want to start going to bed or do some stretching in my room or, you know, whatever, just start recovering for the next day. But when you get older, you realize like how important it is, like the team atmosphere and to like make it fun with the group and not just focus on yourself, but it's to think about the rest of the group and how important, like those things, they really matter. You can't measure it on your power meter or on Training Peaks like you can with your recovery, but it's really important to do that. Like once in a while you have dinner with your friends, even when you're not with the team. I mean, even when you're at home, just to like laughter is worth something as well.
Yeah. For that, I mean, the group with who you raise the most is really important. I mean, I have a super relationship with everyone in the team. But then most of the race you do always with the same riders because you have the same skills, the same program and everything. And about that, more than the performance, create the group really makes the difference.
Yeah, sure. Totally different comment. How much of my book did you finish? I'm curious.
I'm in 2019 when you were doing the races. When you I have just heard the podcast with Jan Maas, because I read and listen sometimes during my bike ride.
Okay. Yeah,
and it was cool. Really nice to hear the stories of Jan, because I know him also quite well, and I didn't know that he was your teammate.
Yeah,
but
Jan's
you had
great.
Also an incredible story.
Yeah, it's so funny. Is there anything that you really liked, like anything specifically? Was there any of the stories that you really liked?
I liked that you were always focused on the numbers, preparation and everything already when you were young. Because, I mean, I also super interested in numbers, VAT and everything, nutrition. But when I was young, I didn't know so much. I mean, for me, a parameter to see if I was good or not was the average VAT in training. I mean, 5 hour 220, 230, I was in good shape. 5 hour 200, 210, I was not super. 5 hour below 200, I was shit.
Okay. How much do you weigh? Like, I'm just curious for reference.
Now around 64, 65 kilo. Younger, okay. I was a bit less, 61, 62.
Okay. Funny. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a power meter until my second year junior. Like, I only trained with heart rate until then. But once I got a power meter, I just liked it because it's an easy way to kind of compare yourself and just see how you're doing. Obviously, it's not only about numbers, but it's just, it's motivating. That's all, but that's funny. But do you know anybody else? Do you know any of the other riders that there's podcasts with? I guess you haven't heard that many of them yet if you're only at that part.
I don't know who, because I didn't check so much. The other in the podcast. I think I've seen now you did the one with Edef Schelling.
Yeah, yeah.
I know him really well. And then also Sepp Kuss, I know him quite well. I mean, also last year he was in Vuelta, so.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, those guys are great. I actually didn't know Ida before recording that podcast, but he's so funny to talk. Like, the podcast was like 2 hours with him just because it was just funny. We were like, I'm like, dude, I'm out of questions. And he's like, oh, but can we still keep talking? Because he's just so bored at the hotel room. I'm like, yeah, sure, man. What do you want to talk about? We can keep talking for sure.
Can I just check? They phoned me in the...
Yeah, for sure. No problem.
Wait, just a moment.
Hey guys, if you want to check out the book we were talking about, it's called How to Become a Pro Cyclist, and you can get it at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com.
I'm back.
Hey.
I have some visitors for later.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Sepp's the other funny one, because I think he's got to be one of the most laid-back pros I know. Like, the guy is, anytime I ask him for advice or something like that, he just makes it sound like training is so basic. And simple, yeah. No matter how simple I think I'm making it, he dumbs it down so much. And the guy is just so level-headed. He, like, is famous and successful as he's been, still the same guy.
He's an really amazing talent. I mean, when you see him racing, he looks so easy. For him, everything is normal, but he's fucking fast.
Yeah, no, he's a freak. crazy. What did you get? You got a new coach when you went to Intermarché from UAE, right?
The first year I kept my coach. I mean, the first year passing from UAE to Intermarché, I came back with my first coach that I had in Lampre, and I worked with him for 2 years. Then after that, I started working with the coach of Intermarché, and I worked with him for 2 years. And then now I changed again because my last coach, like I said, changed for another team and arrived a new one. But in professional cycling, it's like this. We are still in good contact with everyone.
Yeah. And did you learn anything new when you switch coaches, just because it's a new opinion, it's somebody different? Did they teach you anything different or make any changes?
Yeah. In these years, obviously, also cycling is changing. Year per year, there's new things to do and everything. But also every coach has his way of working. And I learned a lot. But one of the most important things I've seen, it's really important to know yourself, I mean, as a rider, and also give different stimulus. Because it doesn't mean that to have a super good results, you did something. If you repeat the same things, you get the same results. You always have to give new stimulus to your body. Others, it get adapted and you don't develop yourself.
Okay. Was there anything like specific though that changed? Can you think of like...
For example, the strength training I added in the latest years, not from the beginning. But for the rest, for example, endurance is almost the same. I mean, it's one of the only things I kept the same. Then the duration of intervals, how hard, and everything I try to change every year. For example, 1 year I do a lot of 40-20 or 1 minute effort. Then the year after, to do the same training, I maybe do 30-30 or 20-40, and the VO2max exercise 2 minutes, or I do intervals like 2 minutes, one recovery, or 30 seconds recovery, repeated for a few times. I mean, the goal of the training is maybe the same, but you give a different stimulus to do like this. Or for example, for the sprint, I don't train so much, but maybe some period I do rolling start, sometimes high cadence sprint, or sometimes sprint on uphill. I mean, you train the same skills, but in a different way always.
Okay, cool. And then, so yeah, like you said, cycling's changed so much now, like cycling's different. What do you think are the main thing, like why, what is different about cycling in like the last 3 years? What are guys doing now that they weren't doing before?
I think nutrition makes a big step. I mean, nutrition during training. And then now they see that maybe 3-4 years ago, when you were reaching a super high number, I mean, over 6 watts per kilo for some duration or incredible numbers, the coach said, okay, like this, it's okay. Or also in the endurance ride, zone two, okay, you have a consistent work, we keep like this. Now, I think we work on the ability of the rider to reach his limit. I mean, there's not, for example, for me, okay, we are doing, for example, I do sometimes a 20-minute test. If in the 20-minute test I do my record or I pass my record, I can say, okay, I'm in shape, we can keep the condition. We always have to work on the best as possible to reach the best, because you never know when you go racing how high will be the level.
Sure. Do you do anything else then? So there's the training on the bike, there's going to altitude, there's the nutrition. You do a little bit of stuff in the gym, a little bit of running. Is there anything else? Like, do you do anything else for training?
Me, for example, I have in my routine to do stretching every day. But honestly, I don't believe so much in the help of stretching. For sure, a bit of mobility and everything. But because for that 15-20 minutes that I do it, I put music and I just relax myself.
Okay.
I think it's
That's
something
cool.
In my routine. I do stretching every day, and a lot of riders ask me, you do a lot of stretching, you believe in it. Yeah, it can help a bit, but I think it's more mentally things that help me.
Okay. I think I do the same thing, but like my relaxation at the end of the day is a really big bowl of food, sitting on my bed with watching Netflix for an hour. That's my relaxation routine. That's my inner peace.
That's also super nice.
Watching Yellowstone at the end of the day. Okay, cool. Last question then.
Okay.
Last question. Do you have any other hobbies? Like, do you have like any other things you like? Do you like cars or clothes or fun stuff away from cycling?
Honestly, car, clothes, and everything else, I'm not so interested. To let you understand, okay. I have the same car since more than 10 years ago. I mean, when I passed under 23, I bought a car. It's still working well, so why I have to change it? But
okay, cool.
For the rest, I like to be always updated about what's happening. I mean, I follow every new trend, every new things, especially in performance sports. I mean, I follow also other sports, starting maybe from football because it's famous in Italy. But also I look other speciality like triathlon, how they train, what they do, and other stuff like this. I mean, I try to change, to take something else from other sports, why they do it, and maybe translate to cycling. But for the moment, I didn't find nothing special.
Okay. Well, then what do you do? Do you listen to podcasts, or do you text them on Instagram to ask them questions? Or how do you, like, for the triathletes, like, how do you learn from them?
I started because sometimes when we do altitude training, we stay in the same hotel. But okay. Then also I do a lot of research on PubMed. I read a lot of studies and I listen podcast when I do long endurance ride.
Okay, cool. What kind of what podcast do you listen to? What are your favorite podcasts?
I don't have a favorite one, but I listen, for example, Empirical Cycling, Fast Talk Club. And also the Training Peaks podcast sometimes. They don't have so much episode. And then I search just something random. I mean, there's not a series, but some good episode from something else.
Okay, cool. Those are all great. I listen to all those podcasts. I know all of those. Those are great. Is there anything like that you've learned that's really interesting on PubMed, like reading any studies? Was there anything that you thought was really interesting?
For the moment, not so much. Only about nutrition, how to divide macronutrients, what they've seen work better. But then about the rest, some good input, but not completely of the study. Because I also seen a lot of studies had a lot of limitation. But most of the study, I've learned a lot. It's about strength training. I mean, especially Ronestad. I don't know if you know him, Brent Ronestad. Yeah, yeah. He did a lot of studies about strength training for cycling and endurance sport. And that worked a lot.
And when you say strength training, do you mean in the gym?
Yeah, in the gym.
Okay. And what did you learn from that study?
For example, how to manage my training. Because like I explained you, the exercise I do and everything, it's a bit from the coach that I had in these years. I taken it, but I created this routine myself. I mean, taking inspiration from what my coach said and what I read in that study. For example, the range of repetition, how long was it, and how to periodize it during the period, the season.